Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Manchester Is Red podcast from the Manchester Evening News. I'm your host, Rich Fay. I'm delighted to be joined once again this week by Samuel Luckhurst.
Hello.
And by Tyron Marshall.
Good afternoon.
I almost called you Tyron Mings then. Not sure.
Not
why.
Tony That's, Marshall.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I've been referred to by a different name in the paper, but not Tyrone Mings yet. Maybe that could be a new one this week.
There's worse names you can be called, I suppose. But
just about.
I don't know where to go from that. You two both had the pleasure of being at Carrington this morning on Friday morning. We're recording this Friday afternoon. Bruno Fernandes is not here yet. He's starting for Sporting Lisbon tonight, we're here. But Samuel, main story today for United really is there's a new captain. Ashley Young's in Milan now, having his medical of Inter as we record this. And Harry Maguire is the new Manchester United captain full-time.
Yes. I think he's the quickest appointment as captain after he came to the club. We were looking through the list of previous players, and I think post-war he's the one to have got it the quickest since he actually signed for United. It is a logical move given where he plays, his leadership traits. I think he's led United pretty well this season. I suppose the only element of surprise is that they haven't given it to a player who's been at the club longer, but as you've seen in recent years, just going to the player for the longevity has not worked. I think Richard Jolly had the stat today about how many appearances there have been between the last three captains and how, in terms of since they were made captain, how many times they played after it, and it's just barely into double figures or something like that, because Valencia was a disaster. Carrick had issues with his heart rate. Are you looking for the specific number now? I'll continue talking in that case.
Flawlessly, this will be.
Yes. So I'll try and keep on rambling on until you've got the numbers.
Sadly, the internet in this room is diabolical, but we've gotten to onto the social media platform that Richard Jolly operates on. And his profile's not coming up, so this is superb.
Wasn't it Carrick 5 games, I think?
I think Carrick was 5
Valencia,
games.
Valencia, we've got 13, Young 9 or something like that.
Well, I can tell you the exact stat once it loads. Here we go. Manchester United's last three club captains have made 32 appearances after being appointed club captain.
There you go.
Carrick 5, Valencia 9, Young 18. Brian Robson made more than 400.
But yeah, he's great for a stat, Rich
so
Jolly.
In terms of the actual appointment then, do you think it's good? I mean, Samuel said it has to go to someone not just on merit, but someone's going to be playing every week, because I guess that's been the issue. I mean, since Solskjaer came in, he said maybe that the armband's not got the same sort of authority that he used to have when he was playing, certainly. But do you think it's a good move by United to give it to an actual active playing member of the squad?
I think so, yeah. I think it needs to be an active player member and someone who's going to play every week in the biggest games. I mean, I think we probably... It's a bit of an English fascination, I think, the captaincy. I don't think in Europe they see it as such a big thing. A lot of Italian clubs will just give it to the player with the most appearances or the oldest. I think it's quite an English thing, but it is still a very traditional thing, and it does mean something in a dressing room of 25 players when some aren't happy they're not playing and things like that. You need someone who can knit them all together, who knows how to talk to different players, when to put an arm around their shoulder, and it helps having that one figurehead. And for two, I mean, you mentioned those three, Carrick, three of his own, but the others have been pretty disastrous choices as United club captains. I think when Rashford was captain against City, he was the seventh different player to captain United in 32 games this season, which is just ridiculous to have had seven different captains in that period of time. And I mean, there's been no rhyme or reason to it. Maguire's tended to be captain. That game he wasn't playing, but when he's not played, De Gea's been captain. De Gea played that game, but Rashford was captain. So it has looked a little bit uncertain. I mean, Solskjaer said that was a reward for Rashford, and he certainly stepped up that night and made a good case that he should perhaps be vice-captain, and it's certainly a role he could inherit in the future. Twan Zabi was captain against Rochdale. That was considered almost a test for him, as he sees him as a future United captain. So you can see why he's done it, but I don't think it helps having seven different captains in the space of 32 games, and giving it to someone who you know is going to be playing every week is going to make a difference, I think.
I guess, Samuel, on that aspect, there aren't many candidates in the first team now. Maybe De Gea, Rashford and Maguire are the only realistic ones who could have got the armband anyway.
Yeah, I think it's too soon for Rashford. And again, Ty makes a salient point in terms of the fascination of the captaincy in this country. You look at players like Casillas and Buffon, who've had phenomenal careers, and they were captains in their countries. I think when there was all that fuss about John Terry back in 2011-12 and whether he should be stripped of the captaincy or not, at that point, England probably should have just kind of like accepted that it's not as significant as everyone is making out to be. And just at that point in time, again, because it sounds daft now, and just giving it to Joe Hart because he was a goalkeeper and you had the Casillas and the Buffon examples. And it would have been understandable if Solskjaer did that with De Gea, who said in the summer that he wanted the role. And it's kind of amusing of United, who in that Solskjaer gave him the captaincy at the start of the season, then he signed a new contract and he's hardly captained them since.
Do you think if De Gea hadn't signed a contract, he'd be captain now?
I suspect he would have. Yeah. That must have been a tactic. I don't think it seems a bit puerile in a way, but it has some meaning to players, and obviously there is an element of pride in assuming that role. But Maguire is just the logical fit, even though he's not been in the club very long at all. And again, you know, I think they have been developing leaders there, but there've been massive caveats in the McTominay. Okay, he's been very good this season, but he's been out recently, and would he be a first teamer from going on from next season? I think he's probably still should be, but there are going to be midfielders coming in, you'd have thought, who are going to provide competition there. Rashford, it is just too soon for, and De Gea, I don't think, even though he possibly sees himself as a leader in a certain way, it's just not the right way. I think certainly for what this United squad needs at the moment, they do need an authoritative figure, and Maguire's had a relatively unremarkable season, but he does have some presence about him, and I think it does help him as well that he played pretty well in a World Cup recently.
I think being a club captain as well is it's almost the more important element of stuff that we don't see rather than the stuff we do see. It's not just on the pitch, it's that stuff at the training ground and knowing when to speak to other players and when players are disappointed and whether to take that message to the manager and things like that, and just kind of bringing that squad together. That's not something that the manager can do on his own. He needs a captain that can speak to the different players and know when a player needs a word in his ear or know when a player needs to see the manager or things like that. And it was noticeable this morning that Solskjaer went to say he'd been surprised by Maguire's kind of off-field leadership and then backtracked and said, well, not surprised, which makes you think maybe he is a little bit surprised. But he's clearly, you know, behind the scenes at Carrington in the way he conducts himself and his leadership qualities there. He's clearly impressed, which I think is a big part of why he's got the role.
I guess while we're talking about Maguire's gain, it's a loss for United that Ashley Young is going. That's confirmed now by the club as well. And Samuel, Ashley Young is a difficult one to look at. He's a model pro, someone who's been played out of position for so long for United and has given us all for the club. But Solskjaer, to be fair, he's got rid of some of the older members of the squad. He's looking to get a younger ethos around there. So from United's point of view, do you think it's good business or bad business? Solskjaer said today he'd like to have kept Young for two more years if possible, but
did he? Did he?
No, I don't think he did.
He said weren't.
He said we couldn't offer him 2 years.
Prepared to offer a 2-year contract. It's a valid. I don't blame him there because I thought he said we were prepared to offer, but he definitely said we weren't prepared to offer. I think they offered him a 1-year deal, which was understandable, but it's an understandable piece of business in that they have got a fee for a player who's 34 and probably would have been released in the summer. I think the throwaway gesture of offering him a 1-year contract was pretty futile because he'd already agreed terms with Inter Milan by that point. He's been a decent player for United, and he was an extroverted character in the dressing room. I think Roy Keane said a few years ago, you know, you can't underestimate the importance of who controls the music in the dressing room, and Young was the dressing room DJ. And I know it's a very, very minor point, and ultimately you've got to play extremely well consistently. You're not judged on whether you're selecting, I don't know, Billie Eilish or Coldplay on your playlist.
I could see the panic in your face.
Yeah, I know. I'd only heard of Billie Eilish this week, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, purely because she's doing the new Bond film. I sound extremely out of touch at the moment. But as I said, he's been a decent player, but it is an understandable piece of business. And to be honest, The way he's conducts himself at the end has been slightly unedifying. It's not going to get as much coverage as Paul Pogba would, obviously. But I was told that on his last day at Carrington was actually on Monday when he cleared out his locker, and he arrived in a taxi and he was hiding in the back, and it was only when he poked his head and made himself visible through the window to the security on the barriers that they let him through, which you wonder why are you doing that. It's just such odd behaviour. And in fairness to Solskjaer, I know he was protecting him, saying he wasn't available, he was injured. I mean, he was clearly fibbing there at that point. You know, throw the player under the bus, you'll probably get more kudos of supporters if you're saying, yeah, this is the way he behaved. So no need to act like that at the end, I don't think. But overall, how long was he at United? 8.5 years. He's been a decent player, but he probably shouldn't have been allowed to play as long as he did for the club.
Ty Solskjaer was asked about his plans post Ashley Young as well. He said he's got Luke Shaw, he's got Brandon Williams, he's got Timothy Fosu-Mensah, he's got Diogo Dalo. He said fullbacks is an area that they're okay with at the moment. Of course, United have stopped their search actively for a new left back as well for the meantime. Do you think United are well stocked in those fullback areas going forward? Do you think they've got enough?
I think so, yeah. I think you'd say you'd want two left backs and two right backs, and in Wan-Bissaka and Dalo and Shaw and Williams, they've probably got that at the moment. Obviously, there's long term question marks over Shaw. I think he's, I was writing a piece earlier, I think he's missed 116 games through injury now and played 119, and obviously 50 odd of those with the broken leg, which is no fault of his own, and was obviously a horrific injury which he's struggled to get over, but it's still not a great record. To be honest, it wouldn't surprise me if he played on Sunday and started on Sunday if he was fit, and Solskjaer clearly still rates him and wants him a part of his squad. I think if you were to sell Shaw, you'd want to sign a replacement, but at the moment with Shaw and Williams, I think you're okay with two. Dalo and Wan-Bissaka, Dalo could play at left back. He mentioned Fosu-Mensah today and him playing right back for Holland. Theoretically,
which no one else remembers.
Yeah, which was when Holland were rubbish, unfortunately.
It was ages ago, wasn't it?
2017, yeah. I think. So a while ago now. Yeah,
it's almost as if as soon as Fosu-Mensah came out of the Netherlands squad, that the Netherlands became
they got really good again. not great timing. But Fosu-Mensah has been one of those players that, and this happens when teams are struggling, that the longer you're out, the better player you become. Your stock actually goes up by not playing. And
Borthwick Jackson's still,
yeah, well, yeah, not that high.
At least he's not mentioned him.
Yeah. And I think Fosu-Mensah's injury, everyone's forgotten the difficulties he's had on loan and how bad he was for Fulham.
I mean, Leroy Sané said that Fosu-Mensah was the toughest player he played against when City won the league with 100 points.
He was good in that game.
Yeah.
The New Year's Eve game, wasn't it?
Do you think there is enough ability in Fosu-Mensah to be able to turn his fortunes around?
No, I think he's up against it now. I think he's only got 6 months left on his contract. He's got an option, but I think he'll have to do... United will probably take the option, I guess, although it might depend on his performances between...
Nothing to lose by taking the option.
Now and the end of the season. He's been mentioned as a midfield option as well.
There's also the, shall we just fumigate the squad and get rid of... he's literally not played for United in nearly 3 years. I think he played reasonably well at Palace. Palace fans quite liked him, and as you say, there was the standout performance against City. Fulham was a bit of a disaster, though, trying to get rid of him last year in January. United didn't want to take him back. I think Huddersfield were interested in taking him on loan, but he didn't want to go there, and it was almost by accident that he played a few more games after the window closed because Ranieri got sacked and Scott Parker came in. So I could understand if they triggered the one-year option, because they did it with Matteo Darmian and there is some money to be made there. But, I mean, the irony of the question asked today, saying, one left-back's going, the other left-back is injured, is that the two players he mentioned to provide cover were obviously right-backs.
And he even asked...
And I know Dalo can play at left back, and I think Fosu-Mensah actually made his debut in the Rashford Arsenal game at left back as well when he came on.
Dalo played against Liverpool at left back, didn't he, in the Champions League for Porto?
Yes, he did, yeah.
And kept a clean sheet, so all eyes
in a game where they were 5-0 up on aggregate or whatever it was. I mean,
Fosu-Mensah's 22 now. You'd say time is running out for him to make it at United.
4 years younger than him in the squad.
Exactly. I think he will get a chance between now and the end of the season, because Solskjaer's mentioned him 2 or 3 weeks in a row now, clearly likes him or thinks there's something there. So I think inevitably he will get a chance, whether it's in whether at fullback or, I think possibly more likely, in a defensive midfield role where United are really short at the moment. He will get an opportunity, but he's got to take it. If he doesn't, then it's game over, isn't it?
Anfield this weekend, Samuel. Marcus Rashford as well was the main talking point of the press conference today. And Solskjaer didn't sound too convinced that Rashford will be back. He said he's going to go through all the tests he can. They're going to give him as much time as they can at Liverpool on Sunday. But gut instinct doesn't sound too good for Marcus, does it?
It doesn't, but Solskjaer is... well, he fibs about team news and injury updates. I think is the polite way of putting about it. Depending on, I mean, as Ty said, when he felt when Solskjaer was talking about him, his guess was that Rashford would be fit on Sunday. There'll be some out there who think, actually, he sounds sincere, he won't be there. I think whether he is or whether he isn't, nobody should be surprised. It's... Go on.
I was going to say, United go into this game on that everyone's expecting to lose. Even if Rashford is half it, do you think it's not just worth just resting him or leaving him out altogether so he can have a weekend off?
I don't think he is worth risking, but I think they would risk him purely because it's Liverpool away, and Solskjaer, knowing how clumsily he can phrase sentences, I wouldn't put it past him to not play Rashford and then to come out afterward and say he could have played today, but we've decided not to. And then obviously all the fans on Twitter piling saying, why the hell didn't you play the guy who's got 19 goals this season? But we've already seen what's happened when United have made players play on injured. However much it aggravated Rashford's injury in the week, I don't think nobody knows, but certainly with McTominay, it was the second or the third minute that he did that injury against Matty Longstaff and in the Newcastle game Boxing Day, and then he didn't come off until half time, leaves the ground on crutches, and he's out for 2 months.
There's also that concern on Wednesday when Maguire went down early on, wasn't there?
Yeah,
the goal.
Phil Jones was warming up immediately, and there must have been, Maguire must have been carrying something for them to immediately say warm up, because sometimes players go down to get treatment, but the player doesn't warm up straight away. That sometimes they just go straight down from the bench and they're told you're coming on. But that suggested that, I mean, Maguire said it himself with his hip injury.
I thought 2 games in that quick succession was quite a risk, because he'd just come back from injury.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's needs must, and it's the same with talk of a back three, which worked to an extent against Liverpool in October. But the flip side of that is that the last time they played a back three was at Sheffield United, which was just a fiasco. And the third defender at the moment with Lindelof and Maguire would be Phil Jones, and there's absolutely no way he should be playing.
I guess we're coming to in Liverpool preview. I was going to ask, if you do go three at the back, who are your two midfielders at the moment? I mean, Mata and Matic were the two most informed, but you wouldn't put them as a pairing, would you?
Fred
and Matic. It'd have to be, wouldn't it?
Because Fred and Pereira doesn't work. Fred and Matic, you think, is better than...
I think there's no choice there. I mean, I've obviously come out with this left-field suggestion that Wan-Bissaka should be the third centre-back with James as the right wing back, which I don't think is illogical at all, but I've been told by many on the desk today that it very much is illogical.
Well, we'll see.
It's a game of opinions.
If Guardiola did it, it would be genius, wouldn't it? So, who knows?
Yeah.
Tyrone, you know what the fans have all been asking. Where is Bruno? Announce Bruno. Friday, we were promised by some Portuguese outlets he'd be signing on Monday. No Bruno Fernandes.
What a surprise.
Where's Bruno? Hashtag where's Bruno?
The saga keeps on going.
He's with Sporting Lisbon.
Isn't he? In Lisbon.
Yeah. What does your gut instinct tell you about Bruno Fernandes this January transfer window?
My gut instinct says I think it'll probably happen. Probably after this weekend when he plays in their big game tonight. I think Sporting have put on Twitter their squad for it, and he's in their squad tonight, so he's going to play. We'll obviously have a better indication of whether he does play in that game, which we all expect him to, and then B, what the manager says afterwards, and whether he does any emotional farewells again. We'll probably give a better indication, but I would sway towards it happening, but it's been a bit of a strange one all round, I think, considering United were so eager not to be used in the summer with links around him, and said it was all coming from Portugal, and to now be chasing him. I mean, his record in Portugal is fantastic. his stats are amazing, but I don't know. Just I just get this
caveat of in Portugal.
In Portugal, just something doesn't quite add up.
They're the reigning Nations League and European Championship.
They are, and he has played quite well for Portugal internationally as well. He was available in the summer for 60 odd million quid, which is pretty good money for a, you know, a decent price for a midfielder with that record. He was linked with half of Europe, but none of Europe's major scouts seem to suggest their team signed him in the summer, which just makes me think, what are they seeing that perhaps we're not, when we just see the odd game in his YouTube compilation of long-range screamers?
Yeah, that's my concern, the fact that, why have Wolves not gone for him?
Well, he's not
George Mendes.
No.
Every
Mendes, you know, touch base.
Moutinho and Neves must surely be above him in there, how they view him.
How
Wolves view him?
Who, Bruno Fernandes? Yeah.
Surely if they've got Moutinho and Neves.
It's a lot of money for Wolves, I would say. Like 50, 60 million.
Would he be a lot of money for Wolves? Or is it just
Moutinho? Moutinho costs a ridiculously low fee, yeah, wasn't he? Million. I know he was in his 30s when he joined Wolves, but he'd still get United's team. And this is nearly 8 years on from when they were looking at signing him. Again, I mean, Ty's covered it. I think you should legitimately be sceptical about a player who is not generating as much interest as they possibly should be for his stats. But maybe it's because, a little bit like Maguire, who City were keen on, the fee is within a region that most clubs think he's just not worth it, whereas United think, well, maybe he is worth it. But the fact of the matter is, 5 months ago, 4 months ago, United were irritated by the Fernandes speculation. It was mainly speculation in the summer. And those at the very, very top, when it comes to making decisions on transfers, were likening it to Nico Gaitan. And not enough has changed for United to change their opinion. I mean, they are entitled to change their opinion, which they clearly have done. But I don't think Pogba's injury or McTominay's injury changes things that much. In the summer, United did need another forward and they did need another midfielder. And it just so happens that Fernandes is still up for sale again. And I suspect because it's the January transfer window and United are looking, pretty dicey, to say the least, in terms of what they might go on to achieve this season, that they feel as though this is a player who is worth a punt now. But again, he's operating in a league where there's no pressure on him. Sporting, as I think I said this last podcast, but they're 16 points off Benfica. If it would be 19 if Benfica beat them this evening. And it's all well and good, James Maddison, I think, with Leicester, they're 16 points adrift of Liverpool, whatever it is, but Maddison has played in the Premier League for 2 seasons now.
And this Liverpool side's the best in Europe.
Yeah.
Benfica aren't the best.
No. And they've got to compartmentalise it. They can't be... I wouldn't put it past them, but if they were to sign Bruno Fernandes, who can play as an attacking midfielder or as a number 10, they can't just say, right, we're not getting Maddison or we're not getting Grealish. You've got to have two of the same, because I think the argument is there that they need two midfielders, and if Fernandes is one of them, fair enough, but if they're buying him to occupy two roles, then I think that's the wrong way of going about it. And you're also building him up far too much. You've seen much better players arrive at United and fall to pieces than Bruno Fernandes.
I guess my other question on Fernandes, Samuel, is if Pogba and McTominay were both fit, do you think they'd have moved for him this month?
No. No way.
Which, again, to me, is a huge warning sign.
Yeah.
The fact.
And I think that's partly why they were reluctant to go for him in the summer, in that if they'd signed Fernandes, Real Madrid have then got the leverage to really crank up the pressure on Pogba, and Pogba's got the leverage to say, look, you've got your replacement in for me, let me go. It's easier done now because Pogba's injured and he's not going to play until mid-February at the earliest. And frankly, I mean, as I said to you the other day, with Sky Germany's line. I mean, the huge but true award for them deciding that Pogba could go in the summer goes to them for this month, because it's not as if anybody else has been saying that Pogba could leave in the summer and that Real Madrid and Juventus are interested. I mean, yeah, we've been saying for quite some time.
You could do a story on that a week.
You could, yeah. You could have done a story on that when the transfer window closed in August. But United have got to get rid of him in the summer. And if they can, that succession plan has kind of already started with Fred and McTominay establishing themselves, but those two have got glaring limitations and they do need a ready-made replacement for Pogba. And I guess Fernandez is at quite a good age in that he's 25, but he is coming from Portugal and there's no guarantee whatsoever that he's going to go into that United side and, you know, set the world alight.
Could be Ronaldo, could be Rojo, who knows on Fernandes. But I guess the other interesting thing with Fernandes is reports in Portugal suggest he could be at Anfield on Sunday when United do take on Liverpool. How do you see that game going, Tyrone? Liverpool away. I mean, I've spoken to some Liverpool fans I know, and they say that, you know, they've not, the one team they've not beaten in the league season is United. United play better when they've got big name omissions. They play better when everything's, maybe the world's against them, they can counter attack. But surely this United can't be the ones to beat Liverpool.
It would be a surprise, but then I don't think many of us gave United a chance going to the Etihad back in December, and they won and deserved to win and could have won more handsomely if they'd have taken their chances in the first half hour. I would say one of the differences there is I wouldn't expect Liverpool to be as naive as City were that day. Everyone knows United's biggest threat. Why United are so good in these games against big sides normally is that they get more room to counter-attack into, because these teams have a go at them and they're excellent on the counter-attack. You would think Liverpool wouldn't, you know, from what we've seen at Liverpool this year, they can dog it out as well as play good football. So you'd think they wouldn't give United as much room to play on the counter in, but these games do suit United. Solskjaer seems to think that United have a good way of playing against Liverpool. Obviously, they've had the two draws at Old Trafford, the only team to stop them winning this season, and they were 5 minutes away from winning that game as well, United. So it will be interesting. I mean, it will be, you'd be surprised if they got anything, but at the same time, you certainly wouldn't rule it out. It will be interesting to see how they set up, because they got joy with that system that he played at Old Trafford. And I think the key to that was not just the back three, but using James and Rashford in sort of really wide striker positions, and that stopped Alexander-Arnold and Robertson from going forward. And we know they're Liverpool's most creative players because the midfield doesn't offer a great deal. So if you can find a way of pinning those two back again, then it might give United a chance.
Sam, you've already hinted 3-5-2 might be the way. I guess tell us more about that. So Daniel James is a wing back. Which I do now. The more you discuss it and you think about who could be missing for United, it does make sense to
I just
for that.
I just think that probably just on the actual skill of defending, Wan-Bissaka is United's best defender. And if you're to play three defenders, three centre halves, he's a better alternative to Phil Jones, who should just never play for United again. Rojo's out of the reckoning. I mean, the possibility he could go this month.
So what would your 11 be for Anfield?
De Gea, Wan-Bissaka, Maguire, Lindelof, Williams, James, Matic, Fred, Mata, Rashford, Marshall, if Rashford is fit. But I don't for 1 minute think that's actually going to be the team. The argument with James is that you've got someone who can run at Robertson and run with him, in that James, although he's been off form for a month now, is quite disciplined in that he can get up and down and he can muck him defensively, and at least he'd have someone like Wan-Bissaka there for cover. There are caveats galore however way you look at however United are going to line up this week. And I mean, Matt's as an example, in that he's certainly in the last two games he's been United's best player, but you wouldn't be surprised if he didn't start at Anfield, because it is not a game that is conducive to his strengths. It's all very well performing against Norwich, who are the worst team in the league, or Wolves in a FA Cup replay that nobody wants to be involved in, but then you're coming up against the best team certainly in England, possibly Europe. Well, I mean, European champions, world champions. There's a chance he could come thumping back down to earth in that game. And as illogical as it sounds, because he's an inferior footballer, there's possibly more sense in playing Pereira as a number 10, which sounds daft, but he's got the energy to put pressure on Henderson to press, things like that. He would literally be selected for what he does off the ball. It's almost like Solskjaer would say, I do not care if you do not even touch the ball in this game. Just make sure you press them and make them, you know, force errors. United have to think quite pragmatically about that because they are that inferior to Liverpool. So, as I said, there are so many combinations and ways of looking at it that I suspect that because Solskjaer said we found a way of playing against them, which is a dubious statement in that he chose two different formations in those two games at Old Trafford last year. But when it comes to Sunday, it wouldn't surprise me if there is a back three or there is some kind of innovative formation that he does go with. The caveat with the split striker strategy was that is that James is out of form, and okay, if Rashford's fit, do you drop one of Rashford or Martial? Rashford's certainly not going to be dropped. I don't think Martial would be either. I suppose, you know, just adding on that is that I think when Liverpool came to Old Trafford, Rashford had been out of form for United. He hadn't been playing well. But even then, he'd got back into the England team in the midweek, and it was that game in Bulgaria, I think it was, where... It was a goalkeeping error, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it one that cut inside?
He cut inside, but the keeper should have saved it, definitely. No, he definitely should have saved
it. I've not seen it from a reverse angle. I don't think I even saw the goal, actually.
Yeah. But at least he was in form at that point, yeah. Albeit on the back of one game. I don't think James at Anfield in a split striker role, I don't think that would work this time.
Van Dijk would be
well. That's why I would start him, in that you've got that option of having him get at Van Dijk or get at Robertson somewhere or another. But there are just, as I said, there are caveats in however way United line up, and unfortunately for Solskjaer, I feel a bit sorry for him in a way, in that if they lose, people are going to say, why does he play him or why does he play him there? But it's such a much of a muchness in certain areas. I wouldn't be surprised if Lingard starts on Sunday, and he has absolutely no right in starting. But again, like Pereira, he's a player who does his best work off the ball, and if he's pressing, he's possibly serving a purpose, or Liverpool are just completely overwhelming him and he's a passenger and he needs to be taken off at half time again.
Tyrone, final question for you. What's your prediction Sunday?
Oh, thanks for that one. Let's go maybe another 1-1.
Okay. Samuel,
I think Liverpool win 2-1.
Okay, just like that. We will be back next week to see just how it goes. Samuel, Ty, thank you very much for joining us this week on the Manchester Red podcast. Please do leave a like and subscribe if you haven't already, and we'll be back again next time.